Hi guys, this week's episode is brought to you by the Annie Selke Companies. You know, the folks behind brands like Dash and Albert and Pinecone Hill. We actually got to talk to Annie about how they pay special attention to not just how their designs look, but also how they feel. More on that later in the episode, as well as a 15% off discount code. You can also visit annieselke.com/YHL to learn more. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today, bloggers Chris and Julia tell us how they pulled off a kitchen renovation in under a week. We share what John's hoarding while I'm decluttering, and we investigate why neutral walls might lower your home value. Hey, John.
Hello.
Back at home.
Yep. We are home after our trip to Baltimore and Chicago last week, which we talked about in the last episode, so let's move on.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, because more's happening this week. Like, tomorrow, I will be celebrating my birthday.
And it's a big one. John Peters.
Is it a big one? Does that count as a big one?
I feel like it's anything that's sort of a round number or a midpoint number. So okay. John's turning 35.
Yep.
I feel like that's momentous. Does it feel momentous?
It doesn't really feel that momentous because I feel like I've been rounding up to 35 for like the last, 18 months.
Is that what's new, that you're turning 35?
Yeah, I guess so. But I guess since that's not really super interesting.
I'm riveted, John. Keep talking.
Yes. You watch me visibly age in front of your eyes. No, I was going to also tack on to that my family was asking me the other day what I wanted for my birthday. And I was quick to say, just some Home Depot gift cards. Right. I'll keep it simple for everyone.
All the Home Depot gift cards.
But
you always give a specific reason, though, which I appreciate. You're like, I will pool these and I will get the X that I want.
Yes. And so the Home Depot cards are my shed fund.
Right.
Because as you guys heard in episode 22, I was having trouble getting some momentum in the shed.
You were stalled.
I was hopelessly stalled. And actually, as soon as that episode aired, I got my butt in gear and I started moving stuff in there. So I've actually made some pretty good progress in there. I wouldn't say pretty progress.
What's your percentage complete?
Well, see, I don't know what my percentage complete is. Because this is how I got over my hump. You know how I was saying in that episode, like, I was having trouble figuring out what was going to go in there and how I was going to lay everything out.
Right. You wanted like the full floor plan before you could get started. And I think it just stalled you.
I realized, that was something I had to let go of.
Take it one small piece at a time.
Yeah. So what I did is I said, okay, what do I know I want there? I know I want a workbench. So I went and bought that workbench that I had mentioned, set it up. And then I said, okay, what do I want next? And I turned back to the garage and I said, okay, what's my problem area here? Like, what's the number one thing? If I have room for nothing else in this shed, do I want to take care of? And that was getting all my scrap lumber out.
Out of the garage and into the shed.
Yeah, out of the garage, because it's all over the garage, like in three different corners, and it's just a mess. And I was like, if nothing else, I want this out of the garage so it doesn't look as sloppy. So I hauled all of my scrap lumber into the shed, built a little like organizer.
Daddy.
Yeah, organizer is probably a generous term for it. But I'll put it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast.
And the saw is in the shed now with the lumber, which makes sense because all the dustiness will not happen next to the car anymore.
Yes, that was the other thing I instituted while I was doing this. I said, as I'm working on it, like as I was building that lumber organizer and I had to bring things into the shed to work on it, they're not going back in the garage. Like once something makes the trip to the shed, it's going to stay in the shed. And now I'm like, the next thing I want to fix, I've got this terrible dresser that has our tools and our screws and everything
with, like,
in it.
Screechy old drawers. So when we're getting like a tube of caulk, we're like.
So if nothing else, I want to solve that. So now I'm working on getting that stuff organized. And then once I have the organized, figure out how much room that takes, I'll move on to the next thing. So I'm just taking things one at a time rather than trying to figure out the full picture from the start.
Well, I have something that's new for me. It's this article I read. You know how sometimes you read something and it's in your ear and out the other ear? This one has stayed banging around in my head for a while. And it goes hand in hand with you clearing a lot of things out of the garage and putting it in the shed. It's from a website called louderminds.com. It's a girl named Michelle Connolly. And she wrote this article called The Joy of Less, 4 Decluttering Epiphanies That Have Changed My Life. So she goes into this whole thing, like when I was first married, I had all these extra dishes and serving bowls and napkins and all these, like a fancy buffet to put it all in. And then I realized I'm not entertaining fancy meals. I have people casually over, if that.
That sounds kind of like be honest with who you are. and don't own things that make you pretend to be someone else.
Yeah, exactly. And she said, like, this other life was gone. Poof. I decided I was never using these objects. And so I donated and pared down. And then I didn't feel bad staring at all this stuff and never entertaining. I felt like I was embracing my current lifestyle and accepting myself for what I am.
I think that's also works in the reverse sometimes, too, because I'm a person. I'm going to use this for me about my shed because I feel like...
Let's talk more about your shed.
Well, me having said I'm buying things for my shed doesn't really feel like decluttering. But I think that's me accepting that I'm a person who spends a lot of my time doing DIY and working on projects. And so I am investing in the things that fit that lifestyle, even if that's not normal for everyone.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think you're just, in some ways, decluttering is just choosing your priorities. You're always going to own objects. You just choose which objects are important to you.
Right,
and it's,
right.
It's making you filter through all the things that you can accept or decline and accept the right ones and decline the wrong ones. And another one of her epiphanies I really loved was, I will need some of this stuff, but I don't know what.
So the thing she's getting rid of, she is acknowledging up front that there might be a time where she's like, I wish I still had X.
Right. And she said, like, would I rather pay for storage, like physically paying for storage and also mentally having all this stuff, just because I might need 1% of these objects again? No, I'd much rather start clean slate, donate, get rid of everything, and then rebuy the like 1% of the objects I need instead of holding the 99% that I don't need.
Can I take this back to the shed again? Because I was having this thought when I was putting my scrap lumber in the organizer, which immediately was very full.
Right. You were a lumber hoarder.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe this is the moment where I should get rid of all of this, but I still kept everything.
Well, you made your fancy rack. Well, you don't want an empty lumber
rack. Why not use it? But I sort of had that thought where like, what's more important here? Holding on to these 100 things that I might use or clearing it all and knowing that, okay, I might have to go out and buy something that I did have, but at least it wasn't taking up space.
Yeah. Every once in a while, something reminds me to be mindful. I mean, there's this Nate Berkus quote from a while ago that was like, be careful about what you bring into your home. Your home is like your special, wonderful place. And don't just like recklessly and carelessly give up your special, wonderful place to all this stuff you don't even care about. It's something like guard your threshold, which I think is smart. Because once it's in your house, it's a lot harder to get it out. So anyway, I loved that post. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. And I also think it's kind of a good season. I know everybody after the new year does the whole like freshening up the house,
or
getting
the
organized.
Spring
cleaning
in April or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like there's a certain amount of excitement to do it before the holidays, just knowing that after Christmas, I'm going to be in this like, yeah. I have all the things.
Before the deluge of stuff.
Exactly.
Well, and speaking of having unnecessary things,
mm-hmm.
Don't you have an update?
Yes, I do. So this is less of an update and sort of more of a continuation of John's That's Embarrassing story from episode 21.
Oh, yeah. So that was when I talked about how I overordered tile for our backsplash in our kitchen.
By like lots.
10 times more. But I think your update, at least, is not our fault.
Right.
Or specifically, my fault.
Yeah, so this was actually not an ordering error, but it was a shipping error. So we ordered 4 brackets from Rejuvenation for our kitchen shelves that we built. We used reclaimed lumber and these really pretty polished nickel brackets. We're going to blog all about it if you guys want to make reclaimed shelves at home. But this is not about how we did it. It's about what happened when I ordered 4 brackets. I ordered 2 pairs of 2. So when 2 boxes arrived, I figured 2 brackets in one box, 2 brackets in the other box. So I opened one box. And inside the box, there weren't 2, there were 12. So then I opened the second box and there were 12 more.
Yes. Instead of 2 sets of 2, we got 2 boxes of 12.
They had only charged me for 4 brackets. So it was like a shipping error.
So if anybody wants some black market Rejuvenation brackets, we've got 20 on hand.
Yeah, right. No, we called them. They sat looking at me for like 2 hours and I was like, I gotta call them.
You did have a moment though where you're like, how can I use all of these?
I figured, you know how sometimes you call and they're like, oh, our fault. Just keep them. So I was like, in my fantasy world, they would say, we don't need the Mac. You can keep them. And then I was going to do this amazing closet makeover with them. But then when I called her, she's like, oh yeah, we need to get those back. It was like hundreds. Yeah. Maybe thousands of dollars of brackets.
Yeah, I'm sure they were
going
to be like, oh yeah, you just keep them. That's our gift to you. And I was like, what? I don't need all these brackets around. What am I going to do with these?
Yeah, John's like, call them. I'm like, okay, but I'm just dreaming about my closet makeover. Let me have this a minute longer.
You see like a random bracket on our wall just hanging out. This is my decorative bracket. It doesn't hold anything.
They're very pretty, but I'm happy with the four I have.
You know what? With my 500 square feet of tile and your 24 brackets, we could have made the most gigantic kitchen.
I feel like we could have opened like a retail store. Chipotle.
What? Chipotle. I was going to say Sherry and John's bracket and tile. Or Chipotle, whatever. It's a clever name too.
I know it's at a retail store, but then I was like, we could tile a wall and put up a lot of shelves and have a Chipotle.
Okay, well, you're weird. And I love you, but I'm going to quiz you now. So this is the part of the show where I quiz Sherry. I give her a category of things.
She nope.
What?
I'm quizzing you today because I got my act together.
Oh.
And I found a really interesting article and I just wanted to talk about it. And I thought we could just chat about it or I could quiz you. So I'm going to quiz you. This all comes from a study that Zillow did about a paint color and the value of a home associated with it. And they used so much data, over 50,000 sold homes from around the country. So they analyzed all the homes and their values, whether they went above or below what they
were. Like their prices.
Exactly. Like were they sold for 1,000 over or 1,000 under the estimated value. So question number one, do you think a kitchen with yellow or white walls will sell for more? Just tell me the one you think is worth more in the buyer's eyes. Yellow walls or white walls in a kitchen?
I'm going to go against my instinct and say yellow walls are worth more.
You're right. By a staggering $1,360 over the value that they estimated the house would sell for, it went over by that much. And white walls went under by $82.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was that was one of the bigger margins for paint colors.
I wonder if it's because in a kitchen, having a color on the wall versus just white might help the cabinets pop or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the people were associating white with like an apartment and it being very plain. And so yellow makes you feel lived in or more homey. I'm not quite sure.
I feel like in general, unless you're buying a house with a very minimal or like clean style, like yeah. That generally probably color on the wall does better than white because it feels more finished.
Exactly. I think you're right. Question number two. Do you think a bathroom that has tan walls or a bathroom with brown walls, which of those two, tan or brown, sells for more?
I'm making a face right now because for some reason, a brown bathroom, I would not want to buy it. So I'm saying a tan bathroom sells for more.
You're right. And it's quantified as dark brown. Yeah.
Bathrooms are too small to be dark brown for the most part.
Right. I like a moody like bedroom in deep brown.
Well, in a moody powder
olive.
Room works sometimes.
That's true. You could have like a gold chinoiserie mirror. Yeah, you could do something cool.
You certainly could do it. It's not my first instinct as a top dollar bathroom.
So now we're going to go into the bedroom. Do you think that the more expensive bedroom has green walls or brown walls?
I'm having to consider brown again. I'm going to say green.
You're right. Light green or khaki performed at $1,332 over what they thought the value would be. So it went over by that much. And the brown room, only $236 under.
Yeah, I had the same instinct as the bathroom. Like, I think a moody brown bedroom could be nice, but I think for a lot of buyers, it might feel dark.
Yeah, I think you can do all these right or wrong. So the dining room, the two color choices are purple or gray. So which one do you think performed better and people paid more for, the purple dining room or the gray dining room?
I'm kind of split on this one. I'm going to say purple.
It's interesting that you said you were split because purple does buy so much more.
Well, so it's not even close.
No, I thought it was a tie at first, but purple was 1,122 over and gray was 1,112 under the value.
Wow.
So they're about $2,000 different.
I feel like the dining room is a place people expect to have like a deep color a lot of times, especially because a lot of dining rooms have chair rail or wainscoting or something.
Right. I'm blown away because I think gray is so hot right now. Everyone's doing gray. You'd think gray in every room would be the best choice. So that one was really surprising because purple, at least to me, seems more polarizing than gray, which seems much safer. So the last one is living room. And the two colors are gray or orange.
Having bought a house with a living room that could be a cousin to orange, our salmon.
I would call it salmon, yeah.
Yeah, our salmon room. I really hope the answer is gray.
The answer is gray. By a lot.
Okay.
Large margin. Lots of people liked a gray living room, which is funny because they didn't like it in the dining room, but they liked it in the living room. So I'll put a link in the show notes to this article for you guys from Zillow, and you can see all the data and read a little bit more about it. But you did surprisingly well. Did you get them all right?
Why are you surprised that I would ace a quiz?
I know. Guys, for anyone listening who wonders why I don't quiz John all the time, it's because he's obnoxious and he always gets everything right. So I will continue to be quizzed and get things wrong for your enjoyment at home.
Well, that was good.
Whenever I try to get John, I feel like I don't succeed.
That was a good article and a good quiz.
Why, thank you.
Well, now I think we should give a ring to Chris and Julia, our friends from chrislovesjulia.com. Because obviously, Sherry, we've had kitchens on our brain lately.
Right, with finishing and revealing ours and doing all the happy dances.
And Chris and Julia just seem to be constantly renovating kitchens.
Right, they're always doing a kitchen.
So let's get them on the phone. Hello?
Hey, guys.
Hey. Hi.
The thing that our listeners don't know is that we actually talked to you guys, like, I think it was 6 months ago, before you actually started your most recent kitchen renovation that happened over the summer.
Yes.
So we're actually going to play everyone that conversation. And then through the magic of podcast time travel, come back to the present day and find out how that renovation went.
Awesome.
Okay, so this is the clip from 6 months ago. Well, we've got you guys on the phone today because we wanted to talk about your expertise with kitchen renovations. Because as we understand it, you are about to dive into your third kitchen renovation within just a 3-year span. Is that right?
Yes. Somehow that has happened to our lives. And we are going to be doing another kitchen renovation in the next just few weeks in Pittsburgh. This one's not for us. So this is our first one that's not our own kitchen.
So yeah, tell us a little bit about each three. What were the three projects?
So the first one, our first house, when we were really new in the whole home design blogging arena, and it was a visual refresh, I would say. There weren't any layout changes.
We didn't know this, but as we were finishing that kitchen renovation, Chris got another job offer, which required us to move. And so...
So you took your kitchen with you?
We wanted to.
We wanted to at the time.
After I accepted the position and we were getting ready to put our house up for sale, that's when we were tiling our backsplash and Jules was just like sobbing as she was doing the grout.
That's true. It was sad because we had worked hard on it and we were not even going to get to enjoy it. And so when we moved to our current home, the kitchen needed a ton of work. And so we saved and we finished this kitchen renovation 6 months ago. Mm-hmm.
So this is your second kitchen. This is the one that people are probably most familiar with from you guys.
Yes.
The ones that they can see under the hashtag CLJ kitchen reno.
Yep, that's it. That's the kind of the one we have now. And like you said, people are familiar with. And then the third kitchen that we're doing is actually in Pittsburgh, where I grew up, and it's for my aunt and uncle. And we thought we were going to have 9 days to do the kitchen renovation.
Yeah, the company we're working with who's doing the appliances, they keep moving the deadline up. So it was 9 days, and then it was 7 days. Now we're down to about 3 solid working days.
Oh my goodness.
You know that's like an HGTV show, you guys.
I know, but we don't have a crew.
Yeah. Exactly. It's insane. It's like the paint is still wet and you're filming the end like, ta-da.
Yeah, that would be really exciting. Is exciting the right word?
Yeah, is that the right word for
that? I can't wait to see it.
Let's talk a little bit about people who might be preparing or considering to take on their own kitchen renovation. What would you guys say are questions someone should ask themselves before they start a kitchen reno?
The first question you have to ask yourself is, am I okay with living in complete and utter disarray for the time it takes to finish this?
But really, I would say, one, what's my budget? And along with that, if I wait a little longer, would I be able to afford this certain upgrade? That's something we really realized in this kitchen renovation in our current home. Of course, when we moved in, we wanted to jump right into the kitchen, but we realized if we wait a year, we could afford this and this. For us, it was worth waiting for that. So what don't you like about your current kitchen is another great question to ask yourself, because then you can really dive in and address serious functional issues rather than just aesthetic issues.
And it's always good to keep in mind that no wall really, well, I guess very few walls are actually permanent. You know, most of them, you can move in some way or you can do something. So if you need to borrow space from an adjacent room, you know, don't lock yourself into where the walls are right now. You know, at least let yourself explore
possibilities.
The possibility of moving things around a little bit.
We have no problem just saying our ideas, even if they're going to be bad ideas, or even if you think the other person might not like it. I think it's just a really healthy exercise, whoever your partner is, to just say, what if we did this? And it kind of just starts a brainstorming session, and you can get a ton more ideas after you just kind of warm up.
What's something, if you don't mind fessing up, something you've put in one of your kitchens that in retrospect you probably could have lived without?
That's the classic Chris sigh.
We put in a stand mixer, or
our kitchen
a stand
aid
for
mixer.
Our KitchenAid mixer.
In your current kitchen?
Yeah, in our current kitchen. It's in a cabinet and it kind of like folds out. And you think about that, you're like, oh, that's so cool. And it just doesn't, it's not that cool.
It looked cool in the picture.
Yeah, it's actually like pretty low.
Yeah, the problem with it is that it's...
It's because you're both giants. Yeah.
There's a drawer above the cabinet that it's in, and so it pushes it down. So it's not even at countertop height, which is where it's supposed to be. So we always just like pull it out and then just lift the thing up and set it on the counter, which is the same as not having it. So.
Well, we thank you guys for all of your insights. We hope you guys survive your new project in Pittsburgh. 3 days is quite intense to do a kitchen renovation.
We're a little
nervous.
If anyone can do it, though, you guys can do it. Okay, so now we're back in the present, and you guys finished that beautiful renovation on time, and it was lovely, even though it was that crazy short timeline.
Clearly, you survived it.
Clearly, we barely survived, but yes, we survived.
Well, was it harder or easier than you thought it was going to be?
It was a lot harder than I had anticipated, and I was anticipating somewhat of a nightmare, but... When we got there and started opening up walls, and it was really rainy outside, and there's just water pouring through the walls, and you look at this and you're like, okay, so we already had an impossible thing, and now we have this giant leak. That happened like 5 or 6 times, I swear. Yeah. Everything in an old house leaks.
And I think that was the one aspect of it that maybe we didn't take into account fully. You know, we had this timeline against us and we were across the country and lots of variables. But I think the one variable that maybe we couldn't have planned for was this was an old house and we've never done a 100-year-old house kitchen renovation before. And I don't think any amount of planning or scheduling could have prepared us for what's behind these walls, because no one really knows until you open them up.
Yeah, I mean, I remembered, Chris, you had told me at one point that you had like almost planned, I think, like to the hour what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. For me, when I have a list of everything that needs to happen in a sequence, it just helps me see, okay, I need to do this first and then this. It also allowed other people to jump in and help. You know, they could just look at my list and see something that they would be able to do and they could help out.
Right. Well, so apart from knowing that old houses are full of curveballs, was there any other big takeaway you had from this experience that you're going to bring to your next project, whether it be a kitchen or otherwise?
So an interesting thing that we did learn from this kitchen was it felt really different because it wasn't our kitchen. And when things did go crazy, like the electrician said that none of the electrical was up to code and all of that had to be updated, we were in a position where we had to be confident. And we realized that I think the whole project was a success because we had to be confident to the homeowners. And I think if it was our house, I think it's really easy for us to say, oh, we'll come back and let's take a break. And I think when you have to get something done, you can't make excuses for yourself. And we really learned that giving yourself a deadline really keeps us motivated and on track and just not letting ourselves make excuses out of a project. But it was really interesting to be in this position where we were in charge of the whole project and a failure just wasn't an option. We had a flight home in 6 days. And so we had to just give ourselves a different mindset. When water came rolling through the ceiling and the homeowners were crying, I couldn't cry. I had to say, oh, it's fine. Even though I had no idea what we were going to do at that point.
You're like, this happens all the time.
Yeah.
What was one of the favorite design choices that you guys made in the room?
We chose this smaller scale subway tile, and because it was just such a small kitchen, I thought even normal size 3x6 subway tile might dwarf the rest of the kitchen. I didn't want it to be a focal point or anything like that. And it just honestly made the whole kitchen feel bigger, because if you're looking at it, it almost looks like maybe that is regular size subway tile and the kitchen's just big. And the other design choice that I really loved that we had issues with but came out triumphant was the bridge faucet.
I have never been more stressed watching Snapchat than when I saw Chris trying to make the hole in that sink.
And that
you mean at 10:30 at night, the night before we were supposed to finish the entire thing?
And I feel like I should back up for a second for anyone who didn't hear that story. I know they can read it on your blog, and we'll make sure we include a link to it, but you had some struggles getting a faucet that would fit the sink that you had ordered.
Yes. So the bridge faucet required 3 holes, and the sink that we bought only had 1 hole. And so we ordered another faucet with 1 hole, and then we ordered another faucet because that one didn't show up.
And then it ended up being delivered down the street, but we didn't find out about that till we got home after the whole thing.
And then Chris said, "I'm going to drill a hole in the sink." It was this huge stressful situation, but now that it's in there, it just makes the whole kitchen. We really needed that old-fashioned looking bridge faucet to really tie the kitchen together.
So I think this begs the question, though. When is your next kitchen?
Hopefully next year. I don't know how. I'm just putting it out there. There'll be another one. We are looking at getting a cabin, and I think it'll be fun to do a cabin kitchen. And
oh yeah, because that would be a completely different probably style and functional need than your daily kitchen at home.
Yeah, and I think we could go a little more, we could have more fun with it, because it's also not one that we or anyone else would be in long term for extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to catch up with you then once you have another kitchen under your belt.
Right.
Well, happy birthday, John.
Oh, thank you, Julia.
See ya.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you guys want to see pictures of all of Chris and Julia's kitchens, we will put links to them in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. And also, if you haven't already checked out their podcast.
Yes, listen to podcasts, guys. They're cool.
They have one called the Chris Loves Julia podcast with host Preston Pugmire. And you can find it on iTunes or I guess wherever you are listening to this podcast.
They know how to use podcasts, John. They're listening to one.
You figured it out this far. You'll be good finding theirs. Well, I know you've got a word digging. I've got one too. But first, let's take a quick break.
As you guys heard, this episode is brought to you by the Annie Selke Companies. And they're the folks behind rugs from Dosh and Albert and bedding from Pinecone Hill. When we got on the phone with Annie, she was talking to us all about the intricate ins and outs of working with textiles.
Yeah, she kept dropping these terms like textile science and hand feel. I actually asked her more about that last one. I love that term, hand feel. I mean, I've heard mouth feel when you talk about food and like chefs. Is that like a technical term?
It is. It's for textiles. It's really trying to improve the textural experience. You know, we do that through enzyme washing, stone washing, brushing. You know, flannel has a nicer hand feel than, you know, say sandpaper. And something that has a good hand feel, you're going to enjoy much more. You know how some things you have to wash and wash and wash and wash and wash until it's comfortable, like in clothing. So we're offering this two new, really kind of cool laundered sheetings. It's pre-wrinkled, it's pre-comfied, it's just good to go.
To check out more about Annie Selke and her pre-comfied designs, you can visit annieselke.com/YHL. That's ANNIESELKE.com/YHL.
And if you're looking to hand feel anything for yourself, does that sound weird?
Sounds totally weird.
Well, you can save 15% off your order at annieselke.com. Just enter code YHL15 at checkout. That's YHL15, and it's good through December 31st. You ready to dig some stuff, Sherry?
I'm so ready to dig all the stuff. And before we get into what we're digging, actually, we've been meaning to say that a few people have requested that we create a master list of all the things we're digging because, rightly so, no one can remember which episode we dug what. So if you're looking for a specific link to a podcast we recommended or an item we think is cool that we linked to in one show note, you might have to click through 20 plus show notes now to track it down.
I don't know how you guys can't keep track of 24 separate episodes. Come on, people.
We can't either. So we think it's a great idea. And we're going to make a master list of all the we're diggings, John colon, Sherry colon, and list what we're digging in each episode.
We're going to rank them best to worst.
No.
Mine will be at the top.
John always wins.
Sherry and her coconut oil could be down near spot 24.
Coconut oil is amazing, John. So what we're going to do so that they're easy to find is we're going to make that master page with all the list, and then we're going to link to it in every We're Digging section of each of the previous podcast episodes and going forward. So if you go into the show notes of 24 or any future or past episode, down in the We're Digging section, there will be a link that says to see everything we've ever dug, click here for the master list. So hopefully that makes it easier for you guys to track things down. And if you're looking for Christmas gifts or whatever, they're all in one place.
I also recommend just going back and listening to all the episodes again. That's the shortcut, guys.
Right.
Okay, well, my We're Digging this week, I may get into it.
You may.
It's a book, a photography book.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to preface it because we've been on a journey.
Take me on this journey.
A photography journey. Back in 2013, people might remember in our laundry room, we hung some photos from a book called Time and Tide. It was this photographer named Christian Chase that he had taken some photos of a beach in Portugal from the same vantage point.
Yes.
Like over years and different times of day. And so you see the tide coming in. You see sometimes it's crowded, sometimes it's empty. And they're just these really pretty photos. So we had hung them in our laundry room. And I think that sort of kicked off our obsession with sort of aerial type beach photography.
Yeah, because then Gray Malin started coming out with all of these awesome aerial shots of beaches. And his are really cheeky and fun. And so what did we do? We bought his book from Amazon.
Yeah. So if you guys haven't heard of Gray Malin before, we followed him on Instagram because he does all these cool photos, a lot of which are aerial photos. He actually like flies in a helicopter over beaches and places and takes these pictures of like the umbrellas and all the towels laid out. So he put out a book, I think, what, like earlier this year?
Yeah.
So we bought that. As we do sometimes, we cut out some pages, put them in frames.
So we have some in our living room.
I'm looking at one right now.
Yep.
I'm looking at another one.
Yeah. Between the two books, you'd think we'd have aerial shots covered.
Lord, but I'm kicking it up a notch. Because I discovered this new book called Overview. And this guy is not just in a helicopter. He actually takes satellite images. He's not in the satellite, but he takes the satellite images of Earth, like almost as if the astronauts would see it. And I guess he's had an Instagram account called Daily Overview, where he's cataloged a lot of these shots that he's gone online and found these satellite photos and just cropped them in interesting ways, or found just really fascinating ways of making the Earth look beautiful. Whether it is like oceans and waters, or if it's like just rows and rows of cargo containers at a shipyard.
Oh, are there any like, you know how the fields of tulips or something color blocked?
That's in there, I think. We've ordered the book. It hasn't arrived yet, so I can't say what's specifically in it, but you can see in some of the articles I found online, they've featured a bunch of the photography, and obviously you can see it on his Instagram account. So I'll put a link to the book in the show notes. I'll also put a link to a couple of the articles that show some preview images. Again, it's called Overview.
And as for what I'm digging this week, it is more of a tradition and less of an actual object, although it does involve objects. I just realized when I was thinking about, oh my gosh, it's almost Thanksgiving, and then my brain goes to, oh, it's going to be Christmas. And whenever I decorate the tree, I think about how sweet it is that one of our family members gives us ornaments with our kids' names on them every year. So our daughter's 6, and she has 6 ornaments that say her name, each given to her each year on Christmas. And our son, being only 2, he has 2, and he's, I guess, going to get his 3rd this year. And every year, the ornaments are different in a way that I didn't even realize how diverse Etsy ornaments could be. Like one year they were sort of like bent metal curved in a script font,
yeah,
saying
like
each
wire.
Kid's name. Yes, exactly. Like swirly wire letters that make up their name and hang from a thin red ribbon. Another year they were felt and they had little beads sewn on them, like little Christmas trees with snow. And it has become so meaningful to me. It's one of those, I wish I had thought about it and I had started it. I just think it's so sweet and I cannot decorate the tree without thinking about how much I love her.
I do think it's a pretty brilliant gift to give. I was going to say it doesn't take a lot of thought. I mean, it is a very thoughtful gift, but it's like each year she can go and say like, I'm going to get the ornaments. I just have to find the design and then like place the order and I'm good.
Right.
And still we, the receiver, are like, oh my gosh, this is so special and thoughtful. And she clearly took time to do it.
Right.
So like checks all the right boxes for all the right people.
I was thinking I could go on Etsy and maybe a few other places that create personalized ornaments and make a little mood board for the show notes. For anyone who's thinking about doing it, you could go to younghouselove.com/podcast and just see some of the ornaments I think are cute that could be personalized and that you could gift or get for your own kids.
Either way, you got to get on it because Christmas is what, like 6 weeks away?
Stop it. It is?
Yeah, probably. What?
I'm panicking. I have to check my gift bag collection. Okay, I know I say this every week, but really, thank you guys so much for tuning in to Young House Love Has a Podcast. We are so grateful for you.
And I know I say this every week too, but if you've got a minute, we'd really appreciate a rating or review in iTunes. They help new folks find our podcast, which helps us keep making it.
And keep tagging us on social media to tell us what you're doing while you listen. Like B-Way Musegal, whose son asked to hear our podcast instead of a bedtime story and fell right asleep.
Proof that we are as boring as I thought we were.
And check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode. Like a look at the amazing kitchen that Chris and Julia knocked out in less than a week.
And a peek at my shed progress.
Here he goes with the shed again.
Later.
Bye.
We just put 2 30-inch ranges right next to each other to make it look like a big 60-inch range.
We have like a 30-inch and we're like, when we renovate the kitchen.
Like, there's the burner I've never used.
Right. We're like, do we do something bigger? And then we like paused for 30 seconds and laughed because literally we have like two pots. Like,
maybe we should get 2 microwaves. Yeah. Put them together and look like a big microwave.
That's our tip.